It's time to get behind the mission with the United Way of the Tananaw Valley on KFAR Radio, promoting all of our incredible nonprofit organizations that truly make Fairbanks the Golden Heart City. And now, let's get behind the mission.
Hello, Fairbanks and Interior Alaska. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Behind the Mission with the United Way of the Tananaw Valley. And my name is Sarah Hollister, and that breathing you heard earlier is my partner in crime, my work bestie, Katie Yara.
Hi, everybody.
And if it's your first time listening to us, thank you.
Yes, we don't just breathe on the air. We actually say a lot of good words.
But the main thing we do is we get behind the mission. We try to get with all of our over 400 local nonprofits, find out what they do, why they do it.
Why it's important.
Yeah, who they do it for.
And how the community can support.
Yeah, and we have a great one.
We do. We're really excited about our guests because this is an organization that's a little new to us. They kind of fly under the radar in some circles, if you will.
I see what you did there. Today we have Trisha Blake. She's the executive director of the Alaska Songbird Institute.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cheap.
Thank you for joining us, Trisha.
Hi, Trisha. Great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. So the Alaska Songbird Institute, your executive director, we were just talking earlier, one of the founding members.
Yep. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about the Alaska Songbird Institute.
Great. So our mission is to conserve Alaska's boreal songbirds through ecological education and research. So we are one of the groups that are based at Creamer's Field, and we have a couple of long-term research projects there that combine community volunteers, youth education, science mentoring for teenagers, and then long-term research on songbirds. So a lot of people may have been back there on the trails, seen the mist nets up along
the
trails.
You're
out there.
All the nets.
Yes, and all of the little nest boxes that are around the front farm road trails, that's our project as well.
Wow. And so remind me, so when I was a kid, back in the day, longer than I want to admit, when I went back there and saw the nets and got to hold the birds and see the bands on their legs, what was the organization then? Because that was not who you guys are now.
Yes.
Like yes and no.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right?
It's a good Fairbanks story.
Yeah.
The Alaska Bird Observatory was founded in 1992, and they're the organization that started the bird banding station out there and also the nest box study out there.
Perfect.
They did a number of projects around the state for 20 years.
Okay.
That organization was around. And in 2012, at the end of 2012, it dissolved for a number of reasons. And a group of us founded the Songbird Institute right away in January 2013 so that we could keep these long-term research projects going uninterrupted.
Excellent.
They're some of the only long-term projects on songbirds in all of Alaska.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a very unique study from what I've seen, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, so songbirds specifically, what is the differentiator there?
Yeah.
Like of all the birds that we see, like I was talking about ducks on the river, they're not songbirds.
Right. Like, you don't remember your field trip.
Well, you know, maybe I do, but maybe our listening audience does not.
Right. Pop quiz for everybody who has been out on field trips at Creamer's Field.
Again, longer ago than I want to admit.
Songbirds they're one of the largest groups of birds out there. They have a couple of characteristics in common. They have perching feet.
So okay.
Three toes that go forward, one toe that goes back, and their feet are capable of perching.
Yep, perfect.
And then, of course, they have specialized voice boxes that allow them to sing.
Okay.
So those are their characteristics. You know, a lot of the big birds that you might see coming up to the front fields at Creamer's, of course, not songbirds. The cranes are not songbirds.
They make noises, but they don't sing.
Yes.
Oh,
so all birds make noises. Songs are a really specialized vocalization that they learn from their parents. Most of them, it's a learned vocalization, and it's the way they attract their mate.
And communicate.
Wow. I'm learning a lot today.
So like a chickadee. is a songbird.
Yes, a chickadee is a songbird. And chickadees, you'll hear them all winter long vocalizing, of course, right? And chit-chatting with each other. But their songs you'll start to hear in the spring when the sun comes back.
Okay.
They have a couple simple note song. Yeah. A lot of people really look forward to that as spring starts.
So, tell us why are songbirds special? Like, why
research them?
Yeah, why research them? What's the passion behind that?
Well, lots of reasons, of course, right? Like, they're a very important part of the ecosystems that they exist in. Mm-hmm. Songbirds eat bazillions of bugs, of course.
I love that.
They eat seeds. You know, they're spreading seeds throughout the forest, controlling pests. They're food for a lot of things. So they're an important part of the food web. Mm-hmm. That sometimes don't get as much attention as they should. And they have been declining, unfortunately, for decades. One of the reasons the Alaska Bird Observatory was founded in 1992 was because that's when people first started to notice really rapid declines in songbirds.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. There was just a really kind of landmark study that came out in 2019 that attempted to quantify songbird loss or bird loss, not just songbirds, bird loss in North America. And they concluded that we've lost 3 billion birds in North America since 1970.
And if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Tricia Blake, who's the executive director of the Alaska Songbird Institute.
Yes. And we were just talking about just the research and bird decline. Can you speak to any of the reasons why that decline happened and continues to happen?
Yeah, sure. I think, of course, it's something that we're all still building understanding about.
Yes.
But by and large, habitat loss and habitat change is very significant for songbirds. For the songbirds that eat insects and things, there are issues with insecticides and pesticides and things that are used in agriculture.
Okay.
And
does it affect the birds or the bugs that they're eating and then?
Both. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So it can be something that they're ingesting or it can be a loss of food. You know, there also are a lot of insect
like if declines. we're killing all the insects, the birds don't have food.
The birds that eat insects
and the habitats, right? Like we're building, we're expanding.
Yep, we're changing habitats. And even up here in Alaska where we are surrounded by so much wild space, you know, our habitats are still changing as well, you know, as climate changes and wetlands are changing. And, so that all impacts all of the species that live there.
Oh, yeah. It's like everything impacts everything and, you know,
yes.
The ripple effects.
Of all the kind of the choices we make and stuff. Yep. Well, so that makes your organization so important for protecting.
Yes. Yeah. So our projects at Creamer's Field, you know, for almost 35 years now, the community in Fairbanks here has been volunteering and helping us collect the data right here in our community about what's happening with our birds.
Mm-hmm.
So that our data can feed into those larger questions and hopefully help to find some solutions.
Very cool.
Yeah. So how big is your organization that kind of does this work?
Well, we are a small but
there's
mighty
you.
Staff. right. We do have, there's three of us that work more or less year-round on our projects. And then we have almost 100 volunteers that help out.
Wow.
And we have a lot of students. Our kids in the summer volunteer almost 1,500 hours out at Creamer's with us, checking nest boxes and helping us capture and band birds.
And by kids, you mean like high schoolers?
Yeah, most teenagers? Of our students are 9 to 18, mm-hmm. the kids that work with us in the summertime.
Wow.
Yeah, and they just dedicate their time and energy. We would not be able to do it without them. And then, of course, in the shoulder seasons, you know, during spring and fall migration, when we're running the mist nets, we have thousands of visitors that come out. We have all kinds of school field trips, mm-hmm. and we have adult volunteers that help us out at that time, usually at the bird banding station.
Very nice. And so you guys probably partner. You partner with UAF, I'm guessing. Do you partner with anybody with your data?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so there are projects similar to ours all over North America.
Mm-hmm.
Our bird banding station, there are similar migration stations all over the U.S. So a lot of our data is requested and pooled with various other stations. Because our birds, of course, don't stay here, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them leave.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And so other bird watching kind of places might get your tag, your band.
Yes, exactly.
And be able to say, okay, well,
this bird went from here to here to here to here.
Yeah, in this amount of time. Or, you know, and that helps us understand where birds are traveling, what habitats they need.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to hope to conserve them, we have to know where they are, right? And what's important for them. And
right, because they're going to go. They'll stay longer where things they need are. They'll leave quicker. They'll travel.
Yeah. Birds are a conservation challenge in many ways, right? Because it doesn't help to just for us to save their nesting habitat up here. They need their migratory habitat and their wintering habitat, which
their
for many
mating
of
grounds
them,
and all the things. Oh gosh!
Wow.
How approximately how many species do we have in the interior?
Oh, geez, you're going to give me
pop quiz.
If you don't, pop quiz.
Well, so we do have, you know, there are various, over the years, there have been various, like, bird challenges going on during migration and things.
Yeah.
The Alaska Bird Observatory used to do something called the Birdathon. Mm-hmm. Our organization has a program called the Fairbanks Birding Challenge that takes place every May.
Mm-hmm.
And so we give people, it's kind of like a scavenger hunt. We give them checklists and people go out all over the borough and try and find all these different species. And it's a fundraiser for us. So that helps support our migration station. And, you know, if people work really hard, they can find 100 species or so, you know, around the borough during peak migration as they're passing through.
Because obviously it's a transient population.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's such a fun time of year because birds are coming through from all over.
Yeah.
You know, birds come to Alaska from all over the world to nest. So we're getting species from, you know, Australia and Africa and Asia and everything coming through. Yeah.
That is really cool.
My favorite bird flies from Fairbanks to Kona. I don't remember what.
Is it you in January?
Yes, it's me in January.
It's a Pacific Golden
Bird
Plover.
Boss.
I was like, I think you might know. My father-in-law talks about it. He's like, there's a bird that goes from Fairbanks to Hawaii every year.
Yes.
I'm like, yes, those are my people.
Yeah.
They are my people.
Bird boss.
Amazing. Yeah. Yes. Very cool. Huh. Well, if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Tricia Blake, the executive director of the Alaska Songbird Institute, and we're going to take a short little break, but we will be back after these messages.
Behind the Mission with the United Way of the Tanana Valley. We'll continue after this short break on KFAR Radio.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah. Sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
The United Way of the Tanana Valley's mission is to improve the lives of every person by mobilizing the caring power of our community. We inspire others to join us in supporting our local nonprofits that serve our friends and neighbors by providing life-changing services here in Interior Alaska. To learn more about how you can give, advocate, and volunteer with us, please contact our office at 907-452-7211 or go to our website at unitedwaytananavalley.com.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m., Behind the Mission with the United Way at 11:30, followed by Sensible Health Solutions with White Spruce Medical at noon, Compo's Outdoor Show at 12:30, Fairbanks Foodies at 1 p.m., Explore Fairbanks at 1:30, The Drive with Glacier Garage at 2 p.m., followed by Building Alaska with Jen Solar. Local shows can be found on the KFAR website in the archives section. Weekend Just Got Local with KFAR Radio. Behind the Mission with the United Way of the Tananaw Valley. And now, let's get behind the mission.
Thank you for sticking with us, Interior Alaska. This is Behind the Mission with the United Way of the Tananaw Valley, where we reach out to our over 400 local nonprofits and we find out what they do and why they do it and how the community can get involved. And today we have Trisha Blake. She's the executive director of the Alaska Songbird Institute. And we were kind of going over, what it is,
the work they do, and why it's important, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, this is a really interesting interview because this is a research-based nonprofit.
Yeah.
Like you guys exist to continue research,
mm-hmm.
yes.
and to feed into national and I assume databases. International
yeah.
databases and studies on the migration patterns of all these birds.
Of the songbirds specifically.
Songbirds.
Songbirds, which we learned have the claw and the foot behind. And then they make a sound.
Three-pronged feet.
There you go.
I knew there was one toe back.
Yes.
The grippers.
You get the grippers.
Yes. The perchers.
So we've, if you've ever walked through Kramer's Field, you may see giant, nets and nesting, little boxes. Mm-hmm. Explain that process, what you guys do with those.
Sure. Yeah. So the migration station is open during spring and fall migration. So mm-hmm. it opens in April, runs through very early June. And then opens back up in the end of July, which is mm-hmm. the start of fall migration, and goes until right about now. We're just closing up
for
the year.
Today.
Yes, we just took down our weather port and everything today for this fall migration is officially over.
Yeah. So
according to us.
Yeah. Still good. So if a bird flies into a net or, during the net open hours, what happens?
Yeah, so the mist nets, we do open and close them every day, so they're never open when we're not there. And when they're open, our crew, our volunteers, and our staff are checking them about every half an hour. We look for birds that are in the mist nets, and when we find them, we carefully untangle them. We transport them in these little cloth bags and bring them to our weather port where mm-hmm. they get measured and weighed. We collect a whole suite of physiological information about them, and they all get a little aluminum band. So every bird that we capture gets its own unique 9-digit number.
Little jewelry.
Yeah. little bling.
Yeah.
And they, those bands are issued by the USGS. They run the US Bird Banding Lab. They issue everyone's permits, everyone's bands. And then they also collect all the data back from us connected to each number. So that's how we find out when one of our birds runs into mist nets in another part of the country.
Right.
The bird banding lab connects those people. Or oftentimes people will find a bird, if it flies into their window or if mm-hmm. their cat grabs it or something. People will find a bird with a band. And you can report
those. Sometimes they'll report that saying,
yeah.
this is where the bird stopped.
Yeah, yeah. And that's also helpful for us because then we figure out where our birds are winding up. Sometimes it's remarkable. We've had birds that we have put a band on them and just a couple weeks later they have been recaptured or found, in the lower 48. So they're cruising sometimes.
Yeah.
And those individual birds can teach us so much just through that recapture.
Is there some birds you recapture just about every year? Or is it generally you're getting a lot of new birds? Or bandless birds, I guess.
Right. At the migration station, we do recapture our own birds, especially the ones that are songbirds can be remarkably faithful to where they nest.
Yeah.
So if they're heading back somewhere on the refuge or somewhere nearby, that we'll often encounter them again in the spring. We had a Hammond's flycatcher this year that she got the longevity record. So it was the oldest Hammond's flycatcher on record. She's 8. We caught her again this year.
This was her eighth year.
Yeah, this is her eighth year.
So, she's a survivor.
Yeah, that's pretty old.
I was like, what is it? What's a lifespan? I mean, I'm sure it varies greatly because songbirds are a decent sized group, like you said.
Yeah.
At least 100 species here, which means worldwide.
So songbirds, many of them don't make it through year one. Mm-hmm. Year one is like incredibly difficult for them. They don't migrate with their parents. So they're taking this first epic journey alone and they, you know, are learning how to survive.
Yeah.
So most of them don't make it through year one. But if they do, often they'll live 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So she's a very old bird.
She's an old lady.
An old bird. Right.
No pun intended. Sorry, this is great. Yeah. I'm so excited.
And we have, you know, our other project, of course, is the nest boxes that we monitor there. And that's for a specific species. So a bird called a tree swallow uses those boxes.
Nice.
And those birds are incredibly faithful to their boxes. Like once they're successful in them, we'll catch the same pair in the same box.
And they're like, this is our summer home. We're flying to our summer home in Fairbanks.
Yeah, we've had tree swallows. We've had tree swallows come back for up to 9 years to their box at Creamers Field.
Wow.
And those birds are going all the way to Central America for the winter. So they're
life
amazing.
Of a bird.
They're really amazing creatures.
So fascinating.
Yeah, so cool. So other, you know, we kind of talked off air. You know, you said you had some birds that you've never caught, or a bird you've never seen in Alaska before. This year you've got one.
Well, not that we haven't seen them in Alaska. We've never caught them before at our station. You know, and this year was year 34.
For the station.
Yeah. Okay. So for 34 years, people have been out there in the same spots, you know, mist netting every spring and fall migration.
Yeah.
And this fall was challenging because it was rainy.
Yeah.
So, we don't operate our mist nets in the rain. So we were kind of just operating them as much as we could. But we did catch a couple of exciting birds. We caught a common yellowthroat. So they're the one we've never caught before. They have started to pop up in the interior a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
They're regular breeders, like, up into the Yukon, but not usually quite
not
this
quite
far.
Not quite this far north.
Mm. But people have been spotting them for the last few years. I think the first one was spotted at Creamers in 2023.
Oh.
So they're sort of, you know, as habitats are changing, birds, some of them are capable of sort of adjusting and are sort of changing where they're
adapting.
They might be going. Yeah.
Do people call you up when they, like, even if you didn't capture the bird, do people submit or call or email you, contact you when they see a bird that they think is rare up here? Like, do people call you up real excited and say, I saw a so-and-so?
Yes. I'm a bird watcher.
It's a very excitable group of people.
Yeah.
Because it's like treasure hunting, kind of.
It is. Yeah.
Especially here.
It is a really interesting time, you know, because birds... You know, some birds are adapting and moving and changing and getting into new habitats. And, so we do get calls from people sometimes with great descriptions of what they saw and sometimes...
sometimes like, it was yellow.
It was brown.
It was brown.
You're like, cool.
Oh, no.
Small and brown. Yeah. Sounded like this. Cheep, cheep, cheep. Had three toes.
Yeah. So always look for those good field marks, you know, when you see a bird. If you look carefully at its head, look where you see different colors, look at its belly, look at the shape of its
sometimes
tail.
There's a little touch of something in the wing.
Yeah, and all those things will help you identify it. There's a fabulous app called Merlin. It's free.
Mm-hmm.
It's it was created by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and a lot of people love it. It's it'll walk you through different bird identifications, asking you where you are and the colors you see.
This is what I'm taking on the river next year.
Yes,
it has a really good sound. Mm-hmm. Identifier.
Oh, so you can listen to their song.
It's not perfect, but it has been getting better. You know, it's been learning as more and more people have been using it. So it's getting better and better.
Very cool.
A great way to learn bird vocalizations.
What was that
songs.
Again? Say it
Merlin.
Again.
Oh, it's called Merlin.
All right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we talked earlier, you are having a First Friday too. Correct?
Yes. Yeah. So we have those core research projects, and then we do a variety of things out and about in the community during the year. So coming up for the first Friday in November, we have a Raven Art Show, and we do it every November at the Morris Thompson Center. It's amazing.
Yes.
The artists Ravens. Everyone loves ravens.
I know. So you get different artists to do raven things?
Yeah. So there usually are at least 15 or so artists, mm-hmm. and the majority of their work all focuses on ravens, which is the world's largest songbird. They're a songbird.
Raven does count as a songbird.
Yeah.
Yay.
So they, that's coming up. I think it's November 7th is this year's first Friday.
Uh-huh.
Okay. 5 to 7 at the mm-hmm. Morris Thompson Center. And we have, in conjunction with that, we have an online fundraiser that's happening sort of the week before and then the weekend after the mm-hmm. Raven show. There's an auction and people can sponsor school field trips, sponsor our high school internships, things like that, that will help us out with the coming field season.
Excellent. Very cool.
And that's where you guys, so you need the public support to kind of keep mission going. And
yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
And do a lot of fundraising and we do, things like
yes,
that.
Yes. The Fairbanks community, as you guys know, is so generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and have supported these projects, the Bird Observatory before us and our organization, you know, for over 30 years now.
Yeah.
To keep all this work going. So we really do count on that support.
Well, we have about 4 more minutes. Is there any other programs, like kids programs? I don't think we touched on any of those. Do you have any kids programs you want to kind of call out?
Yes, those are my favorite, actually. Yeah. Personally. So we do, you know, we do have people integrated through all of our work, and we have school field trips during the spring and fall. But mm-hmm. then during the summer, we have a youth mentoring program and then high school internship program. So the youth mentoring program is for kids who are 10 to 14.
Okay.
High school internships are for high school kids, mm-hmm. Obviously. And those kids work with us on our tree swallow research. So they come out every morning, Monday through Friday, through as soon as school gets out and through the whole month of June, helping us to track all of the nests. We have nest boxes at Creamers Field and then also on the UAF campus. Okay. So, and we usually have about 85 nests that we're tracking.
Okay.
And we wind up banding about 400 birds over the course of that season. And the kids are remarkable. Like, I would never be able to catch and band 400 birds.
Yeah.
So it's all of their help that really make that possible. And it's a really fun program. It gets them hands-on engaged in real science. You know, they're collecting real data. It's not a exercise. They have field notebooks.
And it's an experience that, you know, they get to carry throughout their life, whether that inspires them to go into science and research or not. That's still a very cool thing that they get to add to their resume, that they get to just add to the bucket list of things I've done in my life.
Agreed.
How many people get to hold a bird?
Mm-hmm.
Safely.
Right.
Alive.
Yeah.
And say you got to release it.
Yeah.
So then when you're looking for those volunteers, how if someone's interested or interested in their child being a part of this, how do you guys put out the call for that? Where can they find more information?
Yeah, good.
Whether it's volunteering or supporting or what have you.
Yeah. Everything's on our website and social media, of course. Like, that's an easy way to sort of get all that out there. But then also in the spring, we'll send out information through the school district, through teachers that are connected with us, and through the different schools and things to help recruit kids, through the homeschool organizations, specifically for our kid programs.
Oh, excellent.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Perfect. And then is there any other information that you would want to share, like website, social media, phone number, anybody? If they saw a cool bird or they want to give you money, where do they go?
So our website is aksongbird.org, mm-hmm. and everything is there. I believe our social media and everything is linked on there.
Perfect.
We are on Facebook and Instagram and those things. Mm-hmm. So all our information is there as well. And during the field season, not as much during the winter, but during the field season, so April to September, you can find mm-hmm. us in the Creamers Farmhouse.
Nice. Okay.
We're based over there or out on the trails.
Excellent.
Creamers. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tricia. It was just lovely talking to you. And I learned so much, I think, all of our listeners about the Alaska Songbird Institute.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's so fun to see just the diversity of our nonprofits and the amazing work you guys all do in different sectors. So thank you for sharing and educating all of us.
Yes.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Interior Alaska, for listening.
And we will chat at you next week.
Nice.
You have been listening to Behind the Mission with the United Way of the Tanana Valley. To listen back to this or any of our other local programs, simply click on the archives page at kfarradio.com. Behind the Mission has been a presentation of the United Way and Last Frontier Media Active, the radio station.